interesting little research project with some other folks known as IP over email. Can you tell me about this effort?
Well, unfortunately, it's never quite gotten as far as we've wanted. We've actually got the protocol designed, but it sort of came out of getting some email from somebody in the Soviet Union wanting information about our product. And I started talking with some friends of mine down at a company called Inisoft International. They make a popular VMS email gateway package called PMDF. And we were thinking, gee, it's certainly nice that, that these guys have email, but gosh, I wonder how they could actually ever end up getting directly on the internet. And we figured, you know, if they've got email access, well, what we could do is come up with a framing scheme whereby you could layer IP packets into an SMTP mail message. I mean, if you think about it, electronic mail really is just a datagram protocol. The datagrams tend to be a little bit larger and they can be a variable size, but you can do pretty much anything with them that you want. And if you consider how email functions in its store and forward traversal of the internet, it really is a lot like an IP datagram flowing through the internet. Although the nice thing is that in general, you've got a little bit more likelihood that your SMTP mail message is going to get all the way through than you do, say, of an IP datagram getting through. So the real challenge, though, is that if you're going to support something like IP over email, you've got to make sure that, say, your round trip estimation, the RTT estimation, can handle delays of, say, a day or 2 days or 3 days.
Telnet as an application may not be as snappy as you're used to it.
No, Telnet definitely is going to be a bit slower. I mean, if you can think about how Telnet normally works, you type a few characters, and in general, you end up getting one character per packet. Well, if you think about that in terms of one character per email message, all of a sudden you start realizing that the headers of your email message start dwarfing the actual data inside by, factors of maybe 500 or 600 in the worst cases. Sort of depends on how many email gateways you end up having to pop through. But yeah, the round-trip estimation, I don't know if many Berkeley-derived Unix systems can actually handle a round-trip time characterizations of 2 or 3 days. The other thing you have to worry about is that most Berkeley-based Unix systems have a TCP connection timeout of 37.5 seconds. All of those would certainly have to be fixed. I mean, if you imagine having to send TCP SYN in an email message, wait for the SYN ACK coming back, and then sending the ACK to finally open the connection, you potentially may have anywhere from a few minutes to several hours that will take just to open a TCP connection. I don't know of many TCPs that really are going to deal with that particularly well either, but we actually looked at what the kernel hacks that would be necessary to do that in Multinet, and we've talked with Inisoft and looked at handling it in Multinet. And it's one of those things where as soon as we get in a particularly silly mood, we'll definitely go ahead and add in. It's actually something that it wouldn't really be all that difficult. It's just that I guess we've sort of blown ourselves out on fun and frivolous activities for a while. We, as you know, we've done a number of other entertaining things. And
you should describe some of those.
Well, back about 3 years ago, I met a gentleman by the name of Simon Hackett, who at the time was working at the University of Adelaide down in Adelaide, South Australia. Simon and I met at the Australian Network Shop, which was a meeting of academic and research types from all over Australia to try and put together a national network down there. Now, these guys got started on this process in 89, which allowed them to do something that unfortunately we in the U.S. did not have the luxury of doing. It allowed them to learn from the mistakes made by...
You're able to do it right.
Exactly, to be able to plan on how to do it right from the start. And the ARNET, the Australian Academic and Research Network, has been, to my mind, a shining example of how to do a national backbone. But Simon and I ended up meeting. He was doing VMS support, VMS and networking support down at the University of Adelaide. And he and I met at this conference and ended up chatting quite a bit. And I discovered that Simon has quite a knack for electronic tinkering and interfacing strange things to computers. For example, he worked with some friends of his down there on doing a computer-controlled, in fact, an Apple II-controlled multimedia system. He controlled a CD player, a slide projector, I believe also a film projector, so that he was actually running this multimedia presentation all from an Apple II, which he had programmed himself. And he and I got to discussing how you could make things like that network controlled. And what sort of followed from that was the first SNMP controlled stereo system. We used standard Pioneer stereo equipment, which has this nice little remote control jack in the back. The initial pass of the controller was a custom 68,000 little controller box, which we still have some upstairs somewhere around here. It had 64K of memory in it, so we had the fun of relearning how to program without the benefit of virtual memory. Wrote a simple TCP IP UDP stack, which actually fit in about 6K. Added an SNMP agent, added a simple command parser in it, and ended up building something that was an SNMP controller for a stereo system. You could control the volume, you could select what radio station you wanted to listen to, you could change the input to the CD player, you could play a CD, you could cause the CD disc pack to be ejected, you could pop a new one in. It was really a pretty sophisticated little box.
And it wasn't a general-purpose operating system. All it ran was the network stack and some upper-layer applications.
It was strictly the network stack and a few applications. It was not multitasking. It was single-threaded. But
it was small and cheap.
It was small and cheap, and if you look at how much time we put into it, most of the work for this was done in about a month to 2 months before Interop in 90. It was a pretty amazing little project. It managed to garner both TGV and Simon quite a bit of both notice and, I suppose, notoriety at that particular interop. Now, as it turns out, the following year we did a slightly different spin on the network audio stuff. Instead of an SNMP controlled stereo system, we actually started working on doing audio over the network. Simon developed a protocol called MMDS, the Multimedia Data Stream. Multimedia Data Switch, excuse me. And in fact, that year we actually had one receiver with a PC controller. We decided that the custom, Simon in particular decided that the custom controller concept was a little expensive and rather unwieldy to deal with. So we decided that perhaps a PC with a general purpose operating system running some custom software might be a little bit easier to deal with, and certainly an easier development platform to work with. But using a PC as a front end, using some 8-bit audio cards, and just a standard Ethernet card with packet driver support, he was actually able to develop the hardware and software necessary to take an audio source and just pump it out over the Ethernet using UDP datagrams. We in turn developed a switch that would allow you to be able to act as effectively as phone switch for people being able to call each other up using these PCs or be able to distribute. Neither of us really were worried about supporting multicast at the time, so if you wanted to have multiple people listening to a given audio source, a radio station, for example, you had to have the audio streams redirected through the switch to multiple listeners. And I guess the crowning achievement of that was being able to actually play radio stations from Australia on the Interop show floor. And I guess the most amazing thing about the whole process was when we actually tuned in an Australian radio station, and we discovered that they listen to the same songs that we do. They have many of the same format radio stations that we do. And the most amazing thing is that their DJs are just as obnoxious. They just talk with Australian accents. I mean, you could easily imagine somebody an Australian DJ doing the old obnoxious. I'm from the South, so we used to have monster truck shows down there. And I could just easily imagine one of the Australian DJs saying, "Friday, Saturday, Sunday, come down to the big monster truck stomp." They had quite a few commercials that were in exactly that vein. So,
would it make sense to take radio stations from around the world and put them all on the internet so we could tune in? Would the internet be able to handle that? Do we have the infrastructure for something like that?
I think we will soon. Certainly on the over the NSFNet backbone, if you look at the bandwidths they have nowadays, they're looking at T3 now, or they have T3 now, excuse me, they're looking at gigabit speeds in the near future. It's certainly possible. I think the real issue is, well, one is sort of the acceptable use issue. Is this really an acceptable or even a good use of providing the internet? Certainly it would be an interesting cultural experiment to provide access to radio stations, but I mean, gee, where do you draw the limit? I mean, the interesting thing about the internet is that since there's no centralized management per se, there's nobody saying when to stop doing something. And we certainly know that doing too much of a good thing, if you have 80 or 90 radio sources over scattered around the internet, eventually you're going to end up sucking down the entire backbone, potentially doing strictly audio stuff. And most people, for paying, when they're paying for their internet access, are paying to actually be able to do scientific and research work. I think, however, in a controlled fashion, it could certainly be an interesting cultural experiment. And I think, at least in my mind, that's also one of the purposes of the internet. There are a number of technological issues that need to be dealt with. You really do want to have widespread multicast support, because you don't really want to have 16 or 17 or 20 or 30 different streams running in parallel to different destinations for every input stream. I think as multicast IP becomes a little bit more widespread, that won't be so much of a problem. But yeah, I would actually find it pretty fascinating. I would love to be able to tune into the BBC, or to be able to dial around and pick an Australian radio station to listen to at times, or even on perhaps a more exotic note, listen to some stations in Japan, or Italy. I think there are a number of interesting possibilities.
Well, we've been talking to Stuart Vance. This is Carl Malama, and you've been listening to Geek of the Week.
This has been Geek of the Week, brought to you by Sun Microsystems and by O'Reilly & Associates. To purchase an audio cassette or audio CD of this program, send electronic mail to radio@ora.com. Internet Talk Radio. The medium is the message.